You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We'd like to apologize.
For what?
To absolutely no one! The two-time champ does absolutely fucking nothing!
Love that. Gosh, it's been a while since we've done this, innit?
Yeah, man. It's been...
But special guest in that, Main Chaffin podcast episode 128.
Come on.
Am I right?
128, yeah.
Wow, 128, yeah. That's insane.
We in this.
Professionals now. Come on. 128, we've got a special guest in the building. Please, special guest, introduce yourself. Tell the people about yourself.
Intro. What's good? My name is Sway. I am one half of Ricky Dietz. It's a music project based out of Berlin. You know, my partner's from Germany. I'm originally from Jamaica and landed in Berlin, started a project. It's kind of a mix between some dance hall, some kuduro, some Afrobeat and hip hop, rap. I don't know. R&B. Everything. I don't know what do you call anything these days?
Exactly. I don't think anyone should be putting
just music
in a box.
If you like it, you like it. If you don't,
I love that. That's exactly it. That's
okay.
What we did. You already know what time it is. It's two Dems, also Demi lads. Introduce yourself. Get the aliases off.
Yes. It's Colson Nusi, Don Corleone in the building. Well, in the house at the moment.
In the house.
But yeah, we here, man. We live.
Love that.
Oh, this is different.
It isn't.
We had the aliases before Zoom. So,
We didn't.
We didn't have any aliases. But yeah, it's Eman G45. G is solid in my name. The 45 is silent.
Come on.
It's the Black Mamba Dove.
Come on.
It's Genghis Chibogwe.
Come on.
It's the Cheetah Yam.
Sorry. Yo, okay, hold on, guys. You guys got to tell me beforehand that I need to come up with a dope-ass intro. Like, before we start these conversations, because I'm just listening to y'all roll, and it's like, what the fuck?
Like, my name's Sway. I'm from Berlin.
Like, 4 or 5
How
is silent.
Get them aliases like, off.
We'll let you have another go. After.
Nah, it's all good. Next time. I'll get set up
for
next time.
That's a fact.
Yeah. But welcome to 128, man.
Yeah, 128. Thank you.
All right.
Absolutely.
So this is, I guess, your opportunity to tell us, like, your musical journey. Like, for people who wouldn't know, how did you get to the position you are here? How are you here now, like, talking to us through the power of Zoom?
I mean, I'll try to make it as concise as possible. So basically... Mm-hmm. I started in Toronto making music. I had a rock band.
A rock band?
Yeah. I play guitar and sing and started with a rock band and basically fired all the members because they weren't practicing. I was like, yo, come on. I mean, these are my homies. These are my best buddies.
That must have been painful.
But you got to do what you got to do. You know, some of them I still talk to. Some of them I don't, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, after that kind of went through, I got into songwriting and started writing for John Legend. Wrote a song for John Legend, wrote a song for Tiny Tempa, and did a feature with him. And that kind of started a bit of a trajectory, I guess you would call. And then after that, I signed with Island Records in the UK and Capitol Records in the US, and did a whole, you know, big $1 million deal thing. That you know what? I left the deal, and I'm not saying this like I'm the shit, I'm gonna drop the microphone or something like that. Not like that at all. It got so messy and so complicated that it wasn't worth my happiness anymore. And I just asked them. I just basically went to the president and was like, listen, I gotta go. It's all good. Like, just keep everything, keep the music, keep it all. I just gotta go. And I just started doing music independently for a while. And that was the most beautiful thing I could have done. And during that process doing songwriting, I started, you know, songwriting in Germany, in Berlin, you know, working with a lot of artists and got into a scene there. And then I met my now partner in Ricky Dietz, Pierre. And we just started making music together. Actually, it's funny. He wanted to start a project. He's a very successful German artist and wanted to do a project where he was producing a female artist. And somebody told him to contact me. I don't know why, but he did. And then we started writing for a female artist. We were trying to put together a project, and then he kind of turned to me one day and was like, yo, I don't think we're going to find somebody to do this that like the way we want to do it. So you do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, only if you do it with me. I'm not trying to go out there and do this again like that. And he was like, okay, cool. So we then just started Ricky Dietz, and it really became a fusion for us, you know, between what we would call, I guess you would call DDR, the stylistics of DDR of Germany, you know, Eastern Germany before the wall came down, just the kind of the aesthetics of that, as well as the aesthetics of 70s kind of reggae and Jamaican music. And this is kind of where the two of us came together. It was the intention was like, okay, let's see if Germany can meet Jamaica somehow. And that's why you'll see some, you know, really crazy weird shit in videos, like some barn and a horse, you know, from somewhere in Eastern Germany, you know, with me rocked out looking like, you know, I don't know, early Bob Marley or something.
How would you say the contrast, or how would you say the two worlds have blended so far from what you've seen?
I think, you know, aesthetically, I think it's definitely blended incredibly well, because I mean, I don't know if you know, there's a song called a song that we did, which Flex Pon You, which was shot in Serbia. And the reason why we went to Serbia is because there's a type of architecture that we really, really, really love. And and this architecture really only exists in Eastern Europe, all through the Ukraine, you know, Romania, and also in parts of Germany, but it's really connected to that communist time, you know. And so
correct me if I'm wrong, is that brutalism?
Brutalism. Yeah. Actually, okay. there's a really, really famous brutalist building in London. It's I'm trying to remember where it is to be exact. I think they even shot a movie there, some kind of Brazilian type of movie years ago. It's the building that the corridors are outdoors. So you can go up in the building, but if you wanted to go across, everything is outdoor. My map of London in my head. But anyways, yeah. So you know, this was kind of the aesthetic that we really wanted to bring together with dance hall. You know, so you kind of see, you know, you'll see that kind of aesthetic meets daggering or something.
collide for real.
Kind of the intention, you know what I mean? And then musically, you know, the last song we put out, for example, was Yo Rhonda, which is you know, in our mind, a really interesting mix between Kuduro and Berlin techno. You know, and so things like this is just kind of our, we try to bring these two things together as consistently as possible without just, but at the same time, you know, you never want to make the same thing every time, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You want to, so that's why there's a bit of, you know, there's a bit of Afrobeat, there's a bit of dancehall, there's a bit of Kuduro, there's a bit of, you know.
I think your unique aesthetic really will helps you guys because it makes you stand out. And I think is that that's got to be something you're aiming towards, especially in, you just feel like there's a lot of samism in the current landscape of music. But I feel like what you guys are doing is really trying to make you guys stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I think when conversations go into this place, I really dislike it in a way. No, and what I mean is just like, I don't really feel good commenting on the state of music in a sense, you know what I mean? But I understand what you're saying. You know, I just never want to sound like I'm on my high horse
doing it. I get that.
And I'm the one that's like, I got the uniqueness. I guess I would say that we try to, you know, and I think that's the difference. I think there are some artists that try to be unique and try to create something new. And then there's, you know, a lot of other artists that just take the cookie cutter approach and say, well, this works, so let me do it. You know what I mean? And I think there was a part of that for us that was, hey, let's try to do something different. But there's another part of us that's just bored. Like you get bored of doing what everybody else is doing. Like it's been done. So why not try to do something else? I mean, that's just my personal opinion.
I think that is the correct approach. Like if it's, you should try to push the envelope as an artist. I think if you're not doing that, it will lead to boredom. And I think it does lead to your fans and the people, they'll sense that in your music. Like I think that thing shines through when, you know, you can tell, say an artist is on their third album or fourth album and it's just not hitting the same, because I just don't know, for example, if the interest is there, do you know? But I think if you continue to push the envelope and continue to push yourself outside of your comfort zones, that will change.
It's tough, man. I mean, I would call myself a creator in a sense. I just like to create things, you know, whether it's music, whether it's film or anything. I don't know, whatever it is, I like to create. And I get it though too. I get the difficulty of it sometimes is because it's a real psychological thing. You become very successful for something you've done. And then you have this pressure of maintaining your success, but at the same time, pushing the envelope, you know, and it can be scary for some people that's like, okay, well, why do I need to do that? If like, why, you know, if my income is 1.5 million a year and I could do the same thing over again and make that same money, why do I want to take the risk of losing all of that for something that's unknown? That's really what it comes down to. I mean, it really comes down to money. I mean, artists make money, and then as soon as they get successful, they want to keep making money. They want to keep paying for their, you know, they got their families or what they got their lifestyle or whatever it is, and it becomes a really hard conversation. I think that what differs for some people is that some people, I would say, it's hard to say, because I think the ones that are continually pushing the envelope and are successful, they're hard to rate. You know, like it's hard to rate Kanye and say, has he just become so successful that he can do whatever he wants? Mm. Or is he just really trying to push the envelope no matter if he loses fan base or if he loses money? Because he's not going to lose, right? Mm, like he's already at that point where he's a staple in music, you know? Mm. So it's hard to say, but I think there are some artists that just inside of them, they can't do the same thing again. For them, it's boring, you know? And some of them fail. Like you see some artists come out, they do some incredible stuff and then they're gone. And then other artists get lucky with it and it continues to work, you know.
Definitely.
But I don't know. I always have that question too. Like when you get to a certain height, is it just a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point? Mm. You know what I mean? Like when you're Ed Sheeran and you're so big, like you're so huge. is it just the machine going at that point? Like, you can't stop it.
Like, is it like, no matter what he does, he could say the word "the" on a song, it's going to be successful.
Yeah. And that, not to take anything away from him, because I think he's one of the greatest pop song writers of our time. I mean, he's clearly done it. Yeah. But I just wonder, like, just with just general velocity of any idea, is he so far gone above, beyond everybody, that there's no bringing him down? It doesn't matter what he does.
No, I get that.
I kind of have a bit of a more of a bias towards artists who actually do like make that switch. Because even like, because I did a really long drive yesterday, and I was listening to a whole bunch of Kanye songs, funnily enough, and I was listening from the difference between Graduation to 808. Mm-hmm. And in my brain, I was thinking, for him to actually do that, it's such a risk. And I'm thinking, like, even on your career and your music, like the songs that you had on Colors compared to the songs you're making with as Ricky Dietz, like, was there a part of you that was like, oh, this is a risk, like, this is a very different sounding? Or did you trust your actual artistry that you could pull it off?
That's a good question. I think the easy part for me was the fact that it was another project.
Okay.
Right. So it wasn't Sway Clark. It was just like, I could just do another project. I could be Clown Posse music. I just do whatever fuck I want. Like, put on a new hat, and you could just do that. And so I guess you have there's a leniency when you just call something else. And you say, you know, this is what this is. So there wasn't really the risk. I actually felt that it was more invigorating. I felt that, okay, you know, now I can go do some crazy shit. And I don't have to be held to what I did on Colors. And people won't judge it and say, okay, well, how come he doesn't have an acoustic guitar anymore, for example?
Yeah.
No. I think it's more, you know, an interesting change, I think, for example, is what, I mean, going back to Ed Sheeran again, is what he did, which was, a lot of it was like the A-Team and all that kind of early stuff was super folk. I mean, people don't like to call it folky, but pop folk and, you know, John Mayer-ish. Yeah. And then he just went to like Justin Timberlake. You know, he just sped it up, went to the dance floor, was like, forget this guitar shit.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. Cool. You know.
I think sometimes it's to do with the time.
Yeah.
It's also to do with time, because if you look at Drake and Ed Sheeran, I mean, Drake's last recent release, Certified Lover Boy, wasn't received as well as many people would think. So in terms of the machine or the people who just love Drake because of his music may not be solidified in terms of that sort of ideology, because a lot of people didn't really like the album. They didn't really like the project. Until later, they have a few tracks where they do listen to it. And then, of course, there was a whole debate whether Donda or Certified Lover Boy was better. And people started to prefer Donda because they actually realized it's greater music. It's debatable. I mean, it's for each individual's opinion. But back to Ed Sheeran, I think it's the times, because when Ed Sheeran had come out at that time, a lot of people were into that folky pop. And then now people today are just, they have a different style of sense of music. I mean, probably that's because of our generation and us growing up from that time. We're probably in our teens and our late teens till now, when we're almost 30. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different sound. So with Ed Sheeran, yes, I think you are right in the sense that people will still follow Ed Sheeran because it's Ed Sheeran. But then I also think it's with the time and how music is played. Because I think in the next 5 years, we're going to be listening to heavy rock.
You think he'll come back?
I hope so, but I don't know. I hope you're right.
I'm just making a wild guess. I don't know what's going to come next, but maybe that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really tough, right? To speculate, but I hope you're right. I mean, I kind of see and hear different like smaller artists that are kind of going into that world, or, you know, I kind of thought it was going to go into that world when the Lil Uzi Vert vibe kind of came, and I said, "Oh, okay, this emo rock thing's coming. Like, it's gonna change right now. Like, we're done with the trap. It's gonna change, you know." And I thought this was gonna happen, and it just then turned into a subset of trap.
Yeah,
like it didn't totally push. You know what I mean? But I don't know. Will it come back? Will there be another White Stripes? Like that whole thing. Like, remember that time? There was just, everything was rock. Is that what you think? Like, it's just going to go back to like Kurt Cobain kind of vibes. Like, everyone is just going to be, how?
I think so.
Yeah, how do we get there? That's the question.
It would have to be like its own like subgenre. Because even like talking on Uzi, like, it's not my type of music, the birth of the baby of it, but the Playboi Carti little like subversion of that. It's almost gives me like punk aesthetic, like kids are going crazy at concerts. So I think in the hip hop space, there's definitely potential for that to become the next
thing. Even to a certain extent, what Trav was trying to do, or what Travis does, it is that punk, you know, no fucks given to all that. I guess in its essence, there's a bit of rock in there. Whether it will go full 100 that direction, I don't know. I mean,
even with Willow Smith's recent release, I mean, listen to it. We could almost be there.
Or Machine Gun Kelly.
It's a tough, you know what? I think the thing that we always have to keep in the back of our minds is how technology influences music.
Yeah.
And the reason why, I think one of the big reasons why hip hop became so predominant is because the level of entry became so low. Mm. Like, you were able to make beats with computers, then everything became technological, and the idea of getting Fruity Loops and getting a computer for, you know, 200 euros or 200 whatever the case is, and then, you know, ripping that, and then you can produce beats, and the idea that you're going to purchase an instrument anymore, like, just the cost of it to me is crazy. And then where are you going to play it? And then you got to get a room, and then you got to get people together. And, you know, I mean, maybe there'll be some kind of software that will allow people to jam in separate spaces over a software. You know what I mean? So you can maybe bring back a band or something like this. But it's just so cheap and easy to make hip hop music that I don't know how you go back. You know what I mean? Like, how you go back so organically, or maybe that's it. Maybe it's the spirit that is going to come back, and everything's going to turn into like a rock, that's the direction I think it will head tempo.
I think it will be more a case of the spirit as opposed to, because like you said, if it's cheaper to make and it's easier to make, I just think that would be and hip hop is the number one genre in the world right now. I just can't see that changing. But I do feel like, you know, you look at the younger generation that's doing it, names like Lil Uzi Vert and Playboi Carti, and they're some of the biggest doing it right now. That does seem the direction. It's more the essence will come back of it as opposed to it actually coming back. And you did raise a really interesting point that I've not thought about, and just the sense of how cheap and easy it is to make hip hop.
Yeah. It's interesting.
See?
Very, very interesting. I mean, it's also, you know, when I think about like punk and rock aesthetic in hip hop, and I think about NERD, you know, which that was, which it kind of 100%. Really took that. Like, that was the one hip hop band that was touring and punk tours in the early 2000s. Mm. And, you know, people were just going ape shit at these festivals. But again, I don't know. It's an interesting one. I really am interested to see where it goes. I think things might go hyper pop.
Okay. And what does that sound like?
Well,
give an example.
I think an example would be if you look at early hip hop when in the 90s. And then after the 90s, like, things got so, let's just call it grimy, you know what I mean? Like, things took off so well. You had Eminem, and you know, he was throwing his ex-wife in a trunk and 50 Cent and, you know, just like lyrically, it was just a crazy time. And after that, you then had Kelly Clarkson. You had like this crazy pop movement. You had B.O.B. was a pop sensation. You had Justin Timberlake was back on like number one. Boy bands went from NSYNC, you know, like all of these things kind of happened. And then in the late 2010s, you then had Drake, Kendrick, and then hip hop came back again. Hip hop kind of died and then it came back again, and then it got dirty again. Like music to me got dirty again, and everybody wanted to be dirty. You know what I mean? Everybody wanted to cut off the highs and make everything dark. And I think that hip hop will get to a point where it's so dirty, like the just the vibe of it, that people will start to look for clean again. They'll look for pop again. They'll kind of fluctuate. Maybe you could look at it like just the Republican Democrats or something. I don't know. It's because it's also, and this is all speculation, but if you also look at it in terms of human beings and generational pushbacks. So you have the 70s, and then you have, you know, everybody's hippies and, you know, smoking pot and everything, and then their kids that came out were like, fuck this shit, we're gonna get real jobs, we're gonna push consumerism, and we're gonna become very clean, you know what I mean? And this was a pushback to their parents. And even right now, I think at a time, if you read a lot of the statistics, it's people are starting to get married again. You know what I mean? You have new generations that are going back to being a bit more conservative in some sense than previous. So I kind of wonder why music wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
Just kind of looking back and being, but who knows? I don't know, dude.
So speculation.
No, I think so. Kind of want to push the focus back towards yourself. And one thing we wanted to discuss was music video, specifically your ideas for music videos going forward.
Well, just in general, like your videos, like they're very, like even talking about, you know, the specific take on brutalism, I see in your videos they're very specifically shot, like, and you say you're an artist to a true sense. Do you have a lot of input in the way your videos come together?
You know, I put a lot of that on my partner. My partner is a brilliant dude when it comes to aesthetics, you know, and when it comes to kind of putting visuals to actual words. You know, we sit around and we talk about this concept, and this was kind of the concept that we built at the very start of the project. And, you know, he's a very, very good with working with getting our point across. So I wouldn't take all the credit and say that I did this particularly, because a lot of times I'm in front of the camera and he's behind the camera. You know, it's kind of how we're usually working. He's more of the Danger Mouse producer and I'm the CeeLo Green up front. So a lot of it is him. He has a really, really great visual sense and great. I don't know. He's got good taste when it comes to that kind of stuff. And also, I think because he's far closer to he's German and, you know, he's far closer to that. He knew that when we talked about it, he was like, oh, you know what? And he put me onto brutalism. And I was like, okay. So,
I could definitely see that. Even the video with Western, like the whole like botanical like garden setting, and like the people like were scattered around it, you lot dancing in the middle of that. Like I like how it all like kind of lends to that, because I'm not sure. I could be wrong. I feel like that botanical garden is the one in London. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, we tried to shoot this during COVID, which was a nightmare in itself.
I can imagine.
Imagine trying to shoot between like Germany and England, and then Delta comes, and then they're like, no one's moving. Yeah, but we tried to find a location that had some kind of representation, and we managed to find something that had some tropical aspect to it and had brutalist concrete in it. It's perfect. And so originally I wanted to go there. I was supposed to go and shoot the video with them, but I couldn't fly. I was having a daughter at the same time. And so it was, yeah, it was really difficult. Yes. Yeah, thanks, man. Thank you. So it was really difficult for me to get away because my girlfriend was pregnant. And it could have been that I literally would have left 7 days before she was born. And then I couldn't get back.
Yeah.
I was like, I was like, I don't, I mean,
not worth
I mean, I know artists make sacrifices for their art. But I was like, my first daughter. I don't know.
Yeah, no. I think you made the right decision. But I guess that leans quite nicely into what we wanted to discuss anyway. Trying to make music in COVID. So the last 2 years has been an absolute madness. What was it like trying to make? Did COVID stifle your creativity as well? I think that's also something worth touching on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. COVID, I've got mixed feelings with COVID because I had my daughter during COVID. And so...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I would say to anybody that was planning to have kids, you should have had them during COVID because, because nothing was happening. I couldn't tour. I couldn't go into studio with people, you know, and I wasn't really interested in doing online sessions. Like, it's just, forget it.
It doesn't sound right.
It doesn't feel right. I mean, at some point you just got to be in, just get the vibes. Mm-hmm. And so in some respects, I loved COVID. I know there's going to be some people that listen to it that jump out of their seat and, you know, turn the podcast off right now and, you know, cancel Ricky D. But I loved it because I got to spend so much time with my daughter and I didn't have to be anywhere. And it was great that I didn't have to make a choice to be anywhere.
Yeah.
But on the downside, yeah, it was, it really stifled a lot. It really, I mean, going into the studio at first was cool. It was like, okay, I could just go into the studio and make music. Mm-hmm. After a while, like, I've been in the studio for 3 months by myself.
Yeah.
And then 6 months by myself. And you just start to get to a point where, like, is this music even coming out? Like, what am I doing with this? And I think the hardest part for me and for Ricky Dietz was that Ricky Dietz was never, we didn't build this project to be a Spotify project. We built it to be a live project. You know, that was actually one of the things we thought about. And it was, let's actually build something that is incredibly incredibly prominent live. And we got MIK, which I don't know if you guys know MIK. They're a really cool dance group between Berlin and London. And we coupled with them, they're part of the project. We were on tour. If you see any live footage, you'll always see, you know, me and these two big dancers that make me look like a pea string. But, you know, and live music, you know, it was kind of, that was the intention of it. And so when it started to go to a Spotify game during COVID, it was just depressing. It was like, okay, well, let's release this song. And then what do? Okay, now we're just waiting. And then, okay, let's release another song. And what do? It just kills the vibe, man.
Yeah, the music lends to being outside. It lends to people dancing. It lends to you being on stage, connecting with people. So to lose that element, I couldn't imagine what the sessions must have been like. It's almost like you don't get that kind of call and response element. Like, you could play, you could probably make a song, right, that you know it's going to pop. And then during COVID, you won't be able to go, hey, look, come listen to this. Come see what this does. You can't get that initial human reaction to see if it's actually going to go off or not. So
it's
definitely an issue for the Ricky Dietz specific, like, type of music you're making.
And a lot of artists, I think a lot of artists that came out, because we started 2019 is, I think, the first track came out in late 2019. And, you know, I know a lot of artists that were coming out during that time, just starting during that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had our first summer that was, you know, festivals and things were just like bubbling. And then 2020, it was just, whew, silence, yeah. right? And you know, it's again velocity. It's really hard to keep something going or to start something and stop and start again. You know what I mean? Unless yeah. unless it's a machine.
Yeah, exactly.
A big ass machine. So you know, just to be dreadfully honest, yeah, it was kind of COVID was a bit depressing, man.
What made you guys put out "Don't Touch My Face"? Then was that just a you know what? let's just go for it, man.
No, because okay, so we had 2020, late 2019, early 2020, we had decided, okay, we're gonna go back in the studio in February, March, and we're gonna write some new music and get ready for 2020. Right. Mm-hmm. We were because we had written, I think, about 6 or 7 songs at that time. And we're like, OK, let's just finish a record or let's just go get some more music. And we it's a funny story, I guess, but we booked a studio in Berlin. We booked 2 studios, one in Berlin and one outside of Berlin, like in an hour out in an area called Brandenburg, which is just, you know, cows and sheep and studios. And so we had, so we booked all this, had everybody come in. We had, you know, Cracker Mello come in from Nigeria, producer. We had another dude come in from the States. We had a bunch of people from Hamburg and Berlin, all these people, friends, just come in studio. Let's write some music. Let's create some more vibes for Ricky Dietz. Mm-hmm. And while we were in the studio, like week before the studio, we start the sessions, COVID hits. And everyone was like, what the fuck? Yo, we got sessions next week. And then people start canceling, right? The dude in the US was like, I don't think, you know, Cracker comes from Lagos, Nigeria. He's with us for like 2 or 3 days and things started to get so crazy. He's like, I got to go home. Mm. Like, I got to go home. Like, I don't know what's happening. You know, people. Yeah. And so we then ended up finishing the sessions in Brandenburg, outside of the city. And for us, we thought, okay, we're out here in the middle of nowhere. We're safe. We're just good, you know, but things got so stressful. Like things weren't coming together. And then I think this was just one of the phrases, you know, we had seen some doctor on some news report that was saying, you know, just don't touch your face, you know, just don't touch. And did you guys see this? Like this, and in it, she's like, touching her nose during the conversation is like, yeah, just make sure you don't touch your face and, you know, make sure. And so this just became the phrase in the studio. And the funny thing is we all got COVID in that studio session.
Oh, man.
We all got COVID, man. 2020. So we were in the studio writing, don't touch my face. Ha ha ha. We're not in the city right now. We're out in the field. And we ended up having COVID because someone brought it in from Paris or something.
Jesus Christ.
It's crazy how that's specific.
Yeah, yeah. From Paris. I mean, you know who you are. But yeah, so that was a fun song, man. That was really one of the most fun songs I've ever written. Just in a moment, you know, you just write it, it's there, boom, 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 put it out. It's great. Yeah.
I know this is midway, but your Sway and then there's Pierre. Where does Ricky Dietz come from?
Ah, well, yeah, we wanted to have something that was both of our worlds, you know, that kind of represented both of our worlds. So
yeah,
Ricky, you know, in all of its, I guess, in all of its terrible stereotypes, is a pretty black ass name. You know, just as far as I know, with all, you know, old school, you know, movies and
Ricky,
it's just Ricky. Yeah. Like Ricky, you know, it's just one of those names and it rolls off the tongue, but it's a very black name. And Dietz is a very German name. Like Dietz is a classic German word, D-I-E-T-Z. And so we had brought it together. We were like, well, what about just taking a word like Ricky and Dietz and put it together and you got Ricky Dietz.
Okay.
Pretty much it. Yeah. But the problem is again that people can't pronounce it. Like outside of Germany, people can't pronounce it.
Mm. Yeah. Some people say Dietz.
Dietz and
dad,
and I'm like, okay.
Um Okay, so I guess we wanted to discuss dancing in music. And do you think it's becoming rarer, would you say?
Wow, I don't know. That's a good question. Do you guys think it's becoming rare? I have no idea.
What type of dance?
Because when I think of, when you said that, I immediately thought about Afrobeat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's so predominant in that music. It's dancing is just one with that music.
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think you had a great question. What kind of dancing are you talking about? Like what is it you mean?
Yeah, clarify that one.
Yeah, I'm gonna put it to Collins because he was the one that came up with that.
Wow. Yeah, no, it was my question. But
hot potato.
Yeah, pretty much. Blame me. No,
I'm not blaming him.
It's fine. My logic behind it was obviously I'd watched your videos and I was thinking to myself, like the music and the vibe, it lends to dancing, right? Like you know, if you're at a festival or if you're out and about in a club and your songs come on, you're gonna dance, you're gonna wanna move. And I feel like maybe it's just a generational thing, but I feel like the younger gen kind of don't, like if I go out, which I rarely do now at my age, but if I'm out, I feel like the kids are either like jumping in a corner or like recording themselves trying to vibe. Whereas we were like kind of brought up with like videos that would make you want to do a dance move or like dance. So my question on the basis of that is, do you feel like it's becoming less of a thing? Because I know in dance or with Afrobeats, yeah, you will dance. But I don't know, like even like some videos for some of like my favorite Afrobeat songs, I watched the video and there's no dancing in it. So I'm just like, what was the thought process behind that? So
what was the thought process?
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
what are you guys thinking, man? Like, I'm watching the video. What are you guys thinking? you know what? It's a good question. You probably know better than me, but my thought process, I would probably say I would agree with you. And I would agree with you maybe for a different reason. It's that I think the tempo of music really slowed down. Like right. Music, like trap slowed down the tempo of music so far that you're very limited to what you can do when it is dancing. Like, are you going to be jumping? Are you going to be shuffling? You know, something like this. I mean, dancing, I mean, my technical feeling is like dancing happens above 110. Okay. Right. BPM. So,
okay.
Yeah, like this is kind of that dance floor. If you go into a party and you want to get people dancing, you know, you can play Michael Jackson or a certain kind of old school music, you're always going to hit a minimum BPM. And I think this really dictates whether people dance or not and how they dance, you know? So I think you're right. I think it's changing. I wouldn't be able to say whether it's, I don't know the quantity. I couldn't actually say that it's really like we're becoming a real new society of non-dancers, yeah. You know, like we're really close to the edge, you know, I don't know. Or if it's just, again, a subsection of it, but I would agree with you. I think that the tempo and trap music really changed how people dance.
Yeah.
No, and I think you know.
Are you guys trying to say why a guy's not whining no more? Is that
say
what?
Why ain't guys whining anymore?
Yeah, like whining.
Hey, you know what I'm saying? I had a weird thought at some point in time that because, you know, my Jamaican, I mean,
yeah,
like it is what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I had this real thought that we're kind of getting to this time where everything is becoming, how would you say this? So what is socially acceptable, you know? Okay. And people are really moving away. It's, you know, it's gender terms, it's how you talk to women, it's how you talk to men, it's how we interact. Everything is really getting to a point of really conservative in a way. And whining is not. And I wonder what time, like, are we gonna lose that? Like, are we gonna lose this just grinding? Like, just you know, that like early R. Kelly
grinding. Like, whoa. No. Look, hey, I'm not. Look, but hear me out. Like, there was just a time when music was very, very sexual. Yeah. Like, I'm not just saying him. I mean, if you look at like early dance hall in the 90s, you know, Shama, and everything was very sexual. And I don't know if that's allowed anymore, is what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if that's allowed anymore.
I would probably say it's probably leaning towards it isn't, but I guess a counter would be every song seems to now have a TikTok dance that goes with it. Is that not part of the discussion?
It is, but it's kind of like a seasonal thing. That's that gritty thing right now, right? Like, you couldn't pay me to do that dance right now, because I just don't know what's going on. But
why did you say whining? Because you brought up the word whining. So why did you bring that up? Because that's very different from TikTok.
Yeah. Because I am 8 years older than my younger sister. And in terms of what we listen to is completely different from what she listens to. I mean, now, of course, we listen to very similar music, but in terms of what her friends do. So she had a birthday party just before COVID even started and everything like that. So what they were doing at the birthday party at their age was just alarming to me, because it was like, you guys don't want to just go and dance with some girls. So like, you guys just want to sit in the corner and do nothing. Okay. And then when I was her age, at the age of 18,
you try to get busy.
You're getting hella wines, yeah?
You might know me already, but I'm not going to lie. So, but the thing is, the way it was done and how, like, you could get permission from a girl, you would have to go behind her. If she looks behind you and continues to dance, then that's a yes. If she looks behind you and walks off, that's a no.
It was risky time.
In terms of
pretty much.
Yeah, very risky times. Very, very, very risky times. Sometimes I'll get denied, but most times it was a yes. But today, that element of dancing with a woman now is completely different. Now, in terms of how I have to dance, if I was to go to a club or if I was to go to a bar, I would call it corny, but in that moment, it's just having fun. I can't whine with a girl. That's not going to happen today.
I mean, it's a good point, right? But two things are brought to mind is, one, don't you think the younger generation are absolutely terrified to do what you did? Like, I wouldn't want to do that right now. I wouldn't want to walk up to a girl, a strange girl that I don't know, even if she gave me some eye to say, hey, you're cute. And just think about that. Walk behind her and start grinding on her. Like, I would be terrified.
That's an insane sentence now, isn't
it? It does sound loud. It sounds wild when
that
you say
sounds
it.
Wild, right? Like,
then it was acceptable. And as I said, the way you would know if she wants to, she would look behind and she would either give you the yes or she would straighten up her back and walk forward. And if she does that, that's for you to know that that's not going to happen anymore. You're done.
But today, 2022. I mean, without all of us getting ourselves canceled right now, I mean, the conversation we're having right now is one of those conversations that you guys aren't going to have a 129 podcast. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah.
But it, like, even when I listen to this right now, you're talking wild, reckless, bro. Like, you know, your sister's probably looking at you like, you did what? You guys were animals.
Yeah.
And maybe another thing that it made me think about was that, that it's not only the courage, I say courage, that you had, or the ignorance that you had at that time ago, but the game, like, you don't like younger people who are now meeting on the DM, and that's what they do. Yeah. They have a harder time interacting in face to face.
That's a fact.
Yeah,
so that even is another jump. Like, it's it's how do I act in public and then with a real person. And then it's my brother told me to wildly walk up to this girl and just get behind her and just and if she doesn't move away, it's okay. And if she straightens her back and leaves, it's a no. That's a wild, reckless, like some advice right now. Young people out here, listeners, don't do that right
now. Yeah,
don't do that.
It was only an error and at a time where people it was acceptable to do that. And it's only within that era.
Acceptable.
It was acceptable to do that in that era. And as long as it was good vibes afterwards, and that's fine, right? We're talking about an environment where, I mean, from the ages of 14 to 18, that was absolutely fine for me. But then when I went to a club now, it's completely different. So, as I said, there is a communication there that happens, and she either says yes or she either says no. So I'm not saying just grab up a girl and whine a point like, no. Sometimes there's embarrassment, and sometimes it's just like, humble yourself. You have to hold. It's not a case.
It might end though. It might end, like whining, in Western world, like in our part of the world, might just end.
That's a fact, you know. Really.
Yeah. It might just end. You know, because I was in Jamaica
as well, isn't it?
Huh?
Things are seasonal. Like we're not like swinging, for example, the dancing that they used to do back in the day. We ain't doing that. That died. So these things come and they go.
We're gonna have to wait and see what happens in the summer, you know, or like, you know, when we go out and see like stuff at festivals, at concerts, like how people react to this type of music, like will the vibe be different? And probably, you know, things have changed so much since then, so it wouldn't surprise me.
That's a fact.
Because songs like Bend Over, you can't today. How does that play?
Yeah.
How does it play? Do you get what I'm saying? You can't dagger a girl, can you?
But don't even that
sentence is insane.
But don't you think that's it might be a regional thing? Like, for example, I was just in Jamaica between July and let's say July and November of last year. And I mean, I would go into a small shop to go grab some ackee and saltfish or something. And I look on the screen, like just, you know, the TV that's playing for, you know, everybody in the joint. And it's a hardcore daggering video, like one of those. Yep. Dark videos with a dude with a camera with no light on it, you know what I mean, holding a light, and you see people jumping off of speakers and just throwing women around, and it made me so uncomfortable. I was like, no.
WWE.
I was like,
it really, yeah. Yeah.
This is but I think it's still in that culture acceptable.
Perfectly. Yeah, it's one of those things.
Perfectly acceptable. So bend over
for us to understand either.
Exactly.
We aren't in that culture, and times have changed for us. So gotta let them do what they're doing, I guess.
Yeah.
Like if it's fine for them, and like we're looking at it through a Western gaze, as in that's times have changed for us, but if it's culturally acceptable, you know, what are we meant to say?
Yeah, it's kind of true, man. I mean, It's true. It's true. I mean, we got to go with the times we're in. I mean, if you guys move to Jamaica, then whining, you know, you guys will be daggering again. But
that's definitely interesting.
I guess, lads, do you have any questions before we close?
I just wanted to ask you, like, are you excited just like to get back on stage and back into the festival scene and just connecting with people again? Because, you know, the music lends to that. And as you were saying, you know, 2019, you're outside doing those types of things. Like, are you happy
with
doing that this year?
Definitely, man. I mean, you always think about whether you're going to be on stage and look out and just see masks and stuff, which is weird.
Yeah.
Which would just be weird. You know, it would almost be like we're halfway there. But yeah, overall, definitely. Definitely, man. Definitely.
Are you going to be in London at any point this year for any festivals?
I don't know. Right now, there's not even festivals, and festivals aren't even confirmed yet in Germany.
They're still not
confirmed. So we don't know. We don't know how it's going to play out yet, but cross your fingers, man.
Yeah, man. That'll be dope to see. That'll be dope to see.
100%. So the way this next part works is we select music to put into our playlists. So we have a playlist which comes out every Friday. So yeah, just anything you're listening to right now, your favorite song at the moment, whatever you want to put in a playlist, that's how we tend to conclude the podcast.
Oh, let me think.
So lads, have a think.
It's hard. I'll start.
Go on.
Griselda.
No, relax, man.
Matt, call me.
Relax. Relax, man.
Conway the Machine.
You guys really need to relax, man.
Go on.
Nah, it's rock. What's your name? No, I'm joking.
Of course. Of course.
Hold on. I got to get my phone quick.
All right, man. No worries.
All right, go on. No, so this one is going to be Dizzy Rascal. He did release a track recently, like Graham's Not Dead. But Graham's this one is dead. Flex. Yeah.
All right.
The song is called Flex. Like, we've all heard it. This is back in the day when we're all jamming to it, vibing.
Which song?
Dizzy Rascal Flex.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice throwback there.
Yeah. Okay. That is a throwback that we do listen to.
I will pick. My choice is Water Boys by JID, J. Cole, and Earth Gang. They put out an album last week, this week. But no, it really stood out to me. And Earth Gang are good, like they're a group from Atlanta, I think. And I've been making music for a while. They just got a really cool vibe. They give me kind of Outkast vibes a little bit, but
okay,
yeah,
Earth Gang are cool. I like Earth Gang,
yeah, they're dope.
My choice will be We Don't Talk About Bruno from the movie Encanto. Listen, that song is stuck in my head. I've been trying to get it out for the last 2 weeks and it just ain't happening. Disney absolutely did their thing with that track. So yeah, We Don't Talk About Bruno.
Fair enough.
Okay. That's a good film though, right?
Ah, it's a very good film. I enjoyed it. It's a good depiction of refugees and, you know, trying to find a new land and how you adjust after in being a refugee. And it's got a really good track list. So yeah, it's really good. Would recommend the film and the soundtrack.
Okay. I'm gonna go with Terrence Martin. I've been listening to a lot of Terrence Martin right now, and his last album Dinner Party is super dope. So I would probably say off that record, Sleepless Nights. Yeah.
Cool, man. We'll definitely add that. And also we're gonna add Your Honor as well. We gotta add the new single for Ricky Deets to the playlist as well, for sure.
Nice.
To be done. Show love. Right,
thanks, guys.
No, I appreciate your time, man. It was a good conversation.
Great conversation as well.
We have to doubt. I hope we didn't get cancelled, but we'll see.
Don't worry. If so, we'll just cut out the last segment. It's not so good.
I don't think it was that bad. It was an honest conversation. Like,
I don't know. I
admit that times have changed. Like, that's not who we are. Like, that we appreciate that at the time it was acceptable, and in certain parts of the world it's acceptable.
But we can't be like smiling. That. He's like, nah, bro.
He's trying to cut the mics.
Emmanuel's like, I don't know about that, dude. Yo. Dude, it's a crazy world out there right now, man. You saying shit you think is totally normal, and then
it's true.
Before you know it, they're chopping
before
spirit.
You know it, dude, it's crazy.
Yeah. So we were at an event recently,
is the last thing I was gonna say. A friend of mine was making a movie about a timepiece. Like right now, he's a director, and he's making a movie about Berlin in the 90s and how people used to, you know, and there's characters from the 90s, but how people used to talk back then.
Yeah,
was not acceptable now. Mm. And he's saying, I don't know how I'm going to be able to put this out because it's going to be criticized. And I'm saying, but it's a timepiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so how do you even write something that is a timepiece anymore that represents time that is authentic to how people were talking at that time and not get.
It's important that we look. Like, we appreciate, I think we have to, it's really important that we appreciate that was the way the world was at that time. Like, you look at even things like Friends, you know, like when Gen Z watch Friends, they pick holes in it, but that was how they spoke at the time. That's, I'm not saying it's okay, yeah. I want to make that perfectly clear, like, it's not okay, but that's what it was.
Is what it was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We don't have a time issue. We'll go back.
We'll say, see, yeah, man. You might know. Hey, I agree with you, man. It is what it is, man.
Listen, if this is the last episode, you know why, Sway.
Oh. All right, guys, I got a run, though, man. But it was good. It was really nice to talk to you guys.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you. Everybody can find you online.
Hey, you can find us on Spotify. You can find us on all the, you know, Deezer, whatever it is, wherever country you're listening to, you can find us there. You can find the videos on YouTube under Ricky Dietz, Spotify Ricky Dietz. And I think that Instagram, you can find us on Instagram, Ricky Dietz. And the usual Love suspects, that. Man. Or is it, yeah, I don't know if it's what it's called, Meta now. I don't know, whatever. Zuckerberg has changed it to, whatever he's changed it to, you can find us there.
Awesome.
All right, episode 128. There will be a 129. Until next time, Maiden Chafford on everything. Peace.
Cool. Peace.